And in fact, it can also give you the fixed odds that we're looking at for at least what they set them at. And here, let me go to my, got to go to my my phone. And where did I? I know I got them. Where is, there it is, Tom Lucci. Here we go. In anticipation of Dallas joining us, here it is from the top down. And on the BetMakers fixed odds offering, you're looking at even money for Jack Christopher, 5-2 on Taba, 6-1 on Cyberknife, 7-1 on White Abario. And then, interestingly, that's interesting, Benevengo, they've made 12-1 ahead of Howling Time, 13-1. And then that one time Willard, 33-1. And the other big long shot, King of Hollywood, 66-1. But on BetMakers fixed odds board, even money on Jack Christopher, 5-2 on Taba. So, and you didn't, you may have heard it right at the tail end of Chuck Spina's visit. Chuck seemed to be kind of wavering a little bit. He came in strong for Taba, and then kind of went in the other direction soon enough. Pretty funny. The more he looked at Jack Christopher's PPs, the more he thought that Taba could go down on Saturday. So we'll talk to Dallas in a little bit. We're also expecting a visit, I promised early this morning, from Kate Dalton. They're driving Case, and so she said she wasn't 100% certain that. About you know, where they would be and what kind of signal they would have. So you let me know, and if it's a problem. Also, I guess the streaming service, is giving us some kind of an issue. The case that, where do we stand on that? Did that get resolved at all, or are they? Or is that still an issue with, I forget the name now. It used to be Clear Streaming. You haven't heard back from them? All right. And, well, so if anybody, for those of you that haven't been able to get the stream today, later on, of course, when we load up the archive. All right. And Case, can you restart the stream maybe after we wrap, so people could, well, of course, until the streaming company snaps too, it'll be it won't work. But Casey can load the archive without issue. All right. We are going to talk to Steve Anderson and Dallas Baker in this hour as well, and we'll see about Kate. And let me see where she is, actually. If she's in a spot where she and Bernie can take the call. All right. Yeah. All right. I just sent her a note. All right, so we'll see if we'll see what we get there, and then the other option, yeah, you can also grab. Let's try to grab Steve Anderson as well, so that we can get out in front of tomorrow with opening day at Del Mar as well. All right, so there, try Steve too, and we'll just. We will go with whoever picks up first. yeah, they'll, we'll get them. We'll find them. soon enough. It's not unusual. Let's take a look at, while we're doing that, while Case is making that happen, let's take a peek at the situation at Saratoga as well, and see what, yeah, it all seems all fine, and I don't see any news from the racing office other than the fact that they just had a fire drill at 10:30, which they do on a regular basis. So those of you that were on track and might be listening on track, they are holding MTOs just in case. But right now, starting out fast and firm at Saratoga. So no problems getting going at the spa. And a handful of scratches, it looks like. And I do want to take a look, in fact, at that third race. Because I did make a horse in the third, the DePaula play of the day, and want to make sure we're okay. We are okay. Scratch the 5 and the 9 out of the third. So that's Icarus. The Arrogate Gelding of Bob Lapentes for Brad Cox. That was seemingly going to drop in for 50. And you can also take out the MTO. 6th, 7th, one of the MTOs came out. Inspiration Point in the fourth. Take out Smart Prize, the Cassie for Jack Oxley. The Connect, the fifth is Clear. The sixth, the Maiden Group of 2-year-olds. Take out both the one and the two out of the sixth. Noble Connection, Kenny McPeak. And this was a Paul Pompa bred using one of his Connect seasons. And okay. All right. Dennis Drazen, good morning. Good to see you. All right. So Dennis, we'll come back down this morning, and we'll talk to Dennis. Noble Connection scratched. So is Iya. This is Golden Sense colt that had started actually at Monmouth. Scratches out. The 3 and the 7 out of the 7th. Maxwell Esquire comes out, and so does Nothing Better. The 4 comes out of the 8th. That's Elegant Leoban, Keith O'Brien, and the 5 and the 6 out of the stake, as it happens, which is too bad. Timbuktu and Seaver, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, Timbuktu and Seaver come out of the Rick Violette. But the good news is it seems like whatever weather issues that they had are not impressing on the track at all. So, all right. So Dennis Drazen will join us. Dallas Baker here as well. And a minute, let me and Steve Anderson. I guess that's so. Kate, we're striking out on Kate, huh? All right. So be it. We will look to. Steve and Dallas. All right. Steve Anderson joins us. We just have a couple of minutes to spend with Steve, but I did want to get a little bit of the Del Mar flavor and the Del Mar notebook. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, give us one thing about this meet kickoff. It's so weird that for Del Mar to open like this, it's got to feel a little strange for you and everybody.
Well, it is remarkable. It's nice to see this expected support in the entries in the first 2 days. Now, there hasn't been a grass race in California in a month, so there was always going to be strength in the turf division, but it's also nice to see across the board in the 2 days of racing that have been drawn so far, how much support the track has received in other dirt races as well. So in that regard, they have every opportunity to have a very successful opening weekend. And it's going to be an important opening of the meet because this is a different season. They race past Labor Day this year when people go back to school and go back to work in school and vacations are over with. So the early part of the meeting, I think, is going to be very strong because that's when people will be able to attend who are traveling from various parts of the country or various parts of the state. And they're going to see some very, very intriguing races, particularly on Friday and Saturday.
Talk a little bit, too. You wrote about essentially the full house that was already announced, 10 days ago that there was a sellout.
Yeah, this is an interesting decision by the track in a non-restricted situation because of the pandemic. Obviously, 2 years ago, they couldn't have anybody there, and that was just plain sad. Last year, limited to 15,000. Everyone had to buy a ticket before they get in. This year, a little different structure, a little less than 22,000, 21,700, I believe. And they have a little bit larger crowd for their opening day, but they are limiting the audience a little bit. And it's a reaction to some of the things that happened 10 or 15 years ago when seemingly everybody in San Diego decided they wanted to go to opening day, and then they never went back. Or if they went back, they only went back once or twice. So the crowds on opening day back then were more than 40,000 people. It was great to see a massive audience, but it was impossible to get a bet, get a meal, get a drink, see the paddock very well, in and out of the parking lot, in and out of the bathroom, in and out of just places that you might take for granted if you happened to go on other days when the audience wasn't as massive. And I think that left a lot of people discouraged by the experience because they just didn't feel like they were able to move around to the comfort level that they expect. By doing this tomorrow, having a 22,000 approximate audience, that should not be an issue. They should be able to have a very very comfortable day for the people that are there. And quite frankly, the Saturday card is better than the Friday card. So anybody who's discouraged by not attending tomorrow only needs to reflect on the fact that it's just another day, and you can go to an equally good program on Saturday. So this is probably a sensible decision. I wouldn't be surprised if Saturday's attendance challenges Friday's attendance in terms of on-track audience.
Steve, talk a little bit, looking through your advances, including the advance for tomorrow's traditional opener, the Oceanside, the ideas involved with the Ship and Win program. Santa Anita is also going to utilize the Ship and Win when the pendulum swings back in their direction. You had a number of interesting barns that sent full strings out. Talk a little bit about the flavor of the makeup of the backstretch.
Well, it's got a little bit more of an inclusive group. I mean, you've got six or seven leading barns from the north that have sent small divisions. Jonathan Wong, Cedric Tamayo, amongst the two of them. Steve Speck's going to have some runners at the meeting. There's other trainers as well who'll be involved from the north. And that gives the meeting a lot more runners for everyday races, even though some of those stables also have stakes horses. But it gives that meeting a lot more runners for everyday races, particularly dirt races, which is a division nationwide in most circuits that is in need of support. So that should help the race meet as well. I recall in 2019, the last full year they ran without any impediment, David Jerkins, the racing secretary, on a few occasions, as the meet unfolded, just turned to me and said, "These northern guys are really helping me." I mean, for example, take for a 20 claimer going on the dirt. Say it had five or six, then a northern stable adds one. Now it's got six or seven. It's a lot more of an attractive dirt race. And quite frankly, that you think, well, that's not very many horses. Well, hey, look around the country. Dirt races in a lot of places aren't doing very well. This might solve that problem a little bit over the next 8 weeks at Del Mar to have some horses from the north that are participating. Robertino Diodoro is bringing 20 horses to California, his first time in the state on a full-time basis in 6 years. He said 18 of his 20 runners are dirt horses, so that's going to help those horses. Jack Sisterson's out here. He's got 25 soon, including a new horse called King Max that's going to arrive soon. It's a Del Mar Derby horse that was third at Royal Ascot. Jack's probably got a more balanced barn in regards to dirt and turf, but his stable will help immensely in terms of quality as well. So you're seeing people like that come through. Patrick Bianconz has a half a dozen horses, including the Graded Stakes winner Diamond Oops. So this prize money levels that they're racing for at Del Mar, which is the highest this track has ever had, but does not quite reflect as well some other places in the United States right now. We'll also draw a lot of runners because of that prize money. Remember, California doesn't have a casino behind the corner to help its bottom line, and that needs to be remembered constantly in national discussions, especially the experts on Twitter who criticize the state rampantly for not having higher prize money. Take the casinos out of some of these places in the United States, and the sport changes dramatically and drastically overnight.
No doubt. There's, you know, there's some very difficult dynamics, Steve, obviously, in certain places. And, you know, look at Kentucky and what's transpired there thanks to the historic horse racing. And even before it proliferated and became codified, essentially, you know, even a place like Keeneland, everybody would say, "Oh, I wish that so and so was more like Keeneland." Well, if you ran for 33 days, you know, split up twice, and you had a sales company to underpin your revenue, yes, then more places could be like Keeneland, right?
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? There's a lot to look forward to at Del Mar. Tomorrow, like, for example, I'm staring at the entries right now for the Oceanside Stakes, a 14-horse field. And I was walking around for the last month thinking Balnikoff was going to win from here to there. And I still do have a strong opinion about his chances. But he's got to beat McKinnon, who was third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. He's got to beat St. Anthony, a horse that Neil Drysdale is quietly saying is improving after his win in the Alcatraz Stakes. Probably the best name stakes race in California, by the way, the Alcatraz Stakes at Golden Gate Field. But he's on the improve. Nero Tulip is a 30-1 shot that's for Abel Cedillo and trainer Peter Erton that might be able to hit the board in a big field, because he had such a troubled trip at his American debut that if he has any improvement at all, he could be a surprise. I mean, if you name this trifecta with any success at all, you're going to have a remarkable, I think, return on investment, because it's a very intriguing $100,000 restricted race at tomorrow evening.
Steve, talk for a second about the two new North America runners. Mark Glatt, who we think the world of, he's got Dandy Warhol, and this is a Dandy Man gelding for Red Barn Rancho Temescal, and Costa Aronis and John Sadler have got Sydney Street, the Dark Angel gelding, and they both are added to the horse population, and they could be any kind.
Yes, they could. Sydney Street, I don't think, was helped at all by an outside draw, but the stable has thought a lot of him in the weeks that he's been here in California. So in that regard, high hopes for him over long terms. Maybe he won't win tomorrow because post-14 in a crowded field is going to need a lot of luck. But I still think that Sydney Street might be the sort of horse that deserves consideration maybe for the La Jolla or the Del Mar Derby, which could be in his future, and, you know, not too far from now. And so just because he may or may not win tomorrow, I don't think needs to be don't criticize him too strongly. Dandy Warhol is 6-1 on the morning line, and that seems to be a surprisingly low price for a horse who has only run once, and that was in a Dundalk maiden on March 4th in Ireland on the all-weather going 3/4 mile. He did finish well at 11-1 to provide a surprise in a 14-horse field. So there's promise there. This looks like an ambitious race. I'm a little bit surprised that they ran him in this particular race compared to the allowance race on Saturday for the same three-year-old turf runners. However, that seems to be an indication of confidence that they feel like they've got a prospect that that fits with this group, even though it is a quite deep and competitive group. Of the two recent Irish imports, as I mentioned a moment ago, I do prefer Nero Tulip a little bit.
Talk a good opportunity, I suppose, to, and I'll bring this up with Brad free tomorrow. Brad writing the two-year-old column that is essential for years, of course, Jay Pribman's piece, Dave Grenig, the corresponding effort in New York. But you run into plenty of two-year-olds as well. Steve, who should we be anticipating, you know, barn-wise, stallion-wise, etc., when it comes to the babies that are a big part of the Del Mar schedule?
I'm looking to see what Baffert will do now that he's back now for 3 weeks and is starting to settle into his program. That stable, you know, has a circumstance where they go to the sale and come back with the equivalent of 15 first-round draft choices. And therefore, when you see his barn, particularly in the 1st of August forward, that's one that's an easy answer, but it's also one that annually plays very remarkably. And I think that that he's going to have a very deep team, as he always does. The other one, John Sadler, I think, is looking at a very promising group of two-year-olds from his stable that have a lot of ability as well. So I think Sadler and Baffert are two to follow, two stables to follow in the two-year-old division. You know, it's just such a case-by-case basis as to what to expect once you start seeing maiden races form and what the draws look like. Scouts reports indicate as well. And thirdly, I'd also nominate Michael McCarthy, whose barn is really starting to take a more prominent role in the two-year-old division. Remember, it was a couple of years ago that Rombauer won a maiden race on the turf at Del Mar, and later, of course, the Preakness. So, you know, you may think to yourself, well, it's all about the dirt races. Not necessarily. So, you know, McKinnon was also a turf winner as for maidens last year, and he wound up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. So the diversity within the division is not just six-furlong, five-furlong dirt races.
Before we wrap up, Steve, I do want to ask, because there's no open company two-year-olds, but there is a cowbred two-year-old maiden race tomorrow that goes as the fifth, and it starts the pick six, but an interesting mix that includes, you mentioned Michael W., and he's got an upstart for Mike Rapoli, a cowbred that shows up in here that actually comes in off of a hot 46-4 work. But Peter Miller's presence, and we haven't brought Peter's name up yet, resuming training, essentially. Some thoughts about that circumstance. I see Louis Mendez involved in here, who's always ready to go with his two-year-olds, Walter Solis as well. Kind of an interesting set of maidens to start off the two-year-old side of things on the cowbreds.
They're looking for a lot of success for Miller. Last year, he was the leading trainer at the meeting with 26 winners.
Yep.
And although his stable hasn't had a lot of success so far in the last month since he's been back from his break, there is still some depth to the group, I think, that should be kind of working towards a successful Del Mar meeting. I know he certainly emphasizes this particular season. In the case of Danzig Cat, he's an interesting prospect. He's got a decent work tab, as you mentioned. But it's also worth noting that he is a half-brother to Stealth Drone, who raced throughout the United States and was a first-time winner at Del Mar in his two-year-old year in 2014. And so there's some family pedigree within that runner that indicates first-time success is not out of the question. So Danzig Cat's by a stallion, Danzig Candy, a decent stallion for the region. And, you know, that's something that I think would be a horse to consider. He is 4-1 on the morning line, so he's getting support. And there's a Walter Solis third-time starter in the field called Smoke'em China, who was second twice at Santa Anita in May and June, a very quick runner who drew the outside post 9 in this particular field. He's going to have to show some speed, I think, to be a factor at the wire. So that's an interesting horse as well for this maiden special weight. As you mentioned, it starts the pick 6 and anchors the pick 5 early. So we'll look for that. Also, Cheddar Cheese, trained by Louis Mendez, who so very, very nice set of two-year-olds here a couple years ago as well, and big success. He had Dr. Scheivel, if you recall. And this Cheddar Cheese has worked really quickly, as many of the Mendez runners do, and also has a nice work over the track. 4-1, morning line choice. Edwin Maldonado up, and Edwin Maldonado, as you know, is a very good gate jockey. So if this guy has any quickness at all, you're going to see Cheddar Cheese really close to the front, probably tactically, in the opening furlong of this 5-furlong race.
And just looking 4-1. Smokin' China, that you mentioned, 5-2 favorite, but Coe's second choice with Danza Cat. But that jet of cash looks okay. Steve, great to kick off the Del Mar season with you. I appreciate it, and we'll catch up and check in with you as the summer progresses.
Thank you very much, and enjoy your weekend. It's a big weekend of racing nationwide as well. Thank you.
Steve Anderson, everybody, and you should be following Steve, and does such a tremendous job for the Daily Racing Form, DRF Anderson, and of course, he's an Anderson with an E. Dennis Drazen pulling up a chair for his annual meet and greet, and Dennis, I'm going to have you, rather than the stick mic, because Dallas Baker is going to join us by phone as well, so we can talk. Yeah, slap those on, if you don't mind, and let me see. Yeah, I think that's it. And spin it around. There we go. All right. And Kate Dalton, by the way, Kate is in the mountains, and Kate Dalton will join us live at Colonial on Monday. She's for one of the two jump races at Colonial on Monday, so we will have that visit with her in Virginia instead. And in the focus here for the last half hour, Casey grabbed Dallas Baker on the phone, and we'll have Dallas join us, and Dennis Drazen sitting across from me. Here we are together again, and certainly an exciting day tomorrow, Dennis. You've already changed the landscape in American sports with the landmark ruling with PASPA and what's happened with sports betting, and now the opportunity for us to see how the fixed odds wagering can progress on the biggest day here at Monmouth Park. Good morning.
Good morning. Seems like old times here in person again.
Exactly.
The new normal, or back to normal.
Should be expecting a big day, obviously, Saturday.
Yeah, fixed odds is exciting. Sports betting was wonderful, but you can't just rest on your laurels. You know, you have to keep being innovative. You have to bring in new opportunities. Fixed odds will continue to grow. It's off to a good start. 5 years from now, I think 50% of our handle will be in fixed odds. And actually, this is just the beginning, because next we're going to roll out fixed odds wagers where you're parlaying into ball games.
That you've been threatening that from day one, even well in advance of when the mechanics of the fixed odds became a reality. In advance of Dallas joining us and having a little bit more about the fixed odds specifically, Dennis, let's get a little bit of a pulse taking with where things stand overall. And every year that we talked, and you virtually never wavered about the sports betting and where it would end when it came to the Supreme Court and the way things were going to shake out. What's your view of the way the implementation nationwide, just as an observer, and of course Jersey is producing the best sports betting numbers in the country?
I mean, nationwide, I think the future of wagering and gambling and sporting events is that you're going to have your iPhone or whatever type of smartphone you have, and you're going to have the ability to wager on everything in the world 24/7. And people are going to shift, to that type of wagering. Not that I'm looking to lose handle on the track, so we have to keep being innovative to keep people coming to the track. Like Caesars is doing this new $18.5 million sports book on the track in order to promote people coming here and enjoying the social experience. But I think the future of gambling is wide open. PASPA being declared unconstitutional, and now fixed odds wagering coming on. And there are things you and I haven't even imagined yet that will be offered 5 or 10 years from now. You'll be doing esports, you'll be doing, skilled games competition, you'll be doing other types of gaming that, the younger generation has an appetite for. So I think the future is wide open, and we have to figure out here in the United States how to capitalize on it.
Well, and you've been willing and eager to entertain those ideas and to try them, going all the way back to the Betfair experience and the exchange wagering concept. Casey still working to raise Dallas because when it came to the exchange wagering, one of the real concerns was always going to be critical mass and having enough liquidity in advance of Dallas coming on. What is your read on where things are right now? What kind of goals have you been setting and adjusting? In terms of the reception and where the business is so far on the fixed odds side, are you satisfied? You've taken a long term view of everything when it comes to this racetrack. What's your feel on where things are so far?
So I'll discuss that in one second. I just want to comment about exchange wagering for a minute.
Sure.
I think there's still room for exchange wagering in this country, and we're still looking to do it in the future. I think it failed because we weren't able to get any of the major signals consents, to offer exchange wagering. And I think the key component, of exchange wagering that I'm keen on is the in-play wagering. So that's all new money. No one's really doing the in-play, on horse racing right now. So I think there's a future for that, but more importantly, on fixed odds. Fixed odds has grown the Australian business. We have over 300 million people. We do about 11 to 12 billion annually in handle. They have 30 million people. They do, significantly more than we do, probably double or triple. I think they're about 30 billion Australian. And it's proven, that there's an appetite for it. I think it solves a lot of issues that the casual customer here complains to me about. They bet a horse at 2-1, it goes off, and it's 1-5.
Exactly.
Or, 1-2. But that's going to solve that. But somebody had to take a shot with this. I guess people find me willing to do these things.
Yep.
I met with bet makers right before COVID. We started having conversations. I think I'm very pleased with fixed odds right now here at Monmouth. We knew it would be slow growing. Think about 74% of the time, the consumer is getting a better odd by shopping for their odds on the fixed odds system. Doesn't always work that way, but most of the time it does. And most of the people I talk to, are thrilled with the concept. And I think it's going to take time, like 5 years from now, as I said. Probably 50% of the handle throughout the country will do that. We started off slow with fixed odds, so we carefully considered, all the comments from around the country, what's the right split, what's the right rate, is it going to be cannibalizing? So we started off with win, place, show. We're not permitting exotics. That's about a third of our total handle, so we can, figure it out as we go along. But I think so far it's been successful. We seem to have created an appetite where other states will have to come on as time goes. But our consumers here, are excited about it. And the next step, which I can't really accurately predict right this second, but we're trying to launch our app for Saturday. If not Saturday, it'll probably be a week later or 2 weeks later. But, to have an app that offers fixed odds also, I think will increase the handle. Then I think, we have to carefully deal with some of the other states, like Colorado now is ready to launch.
Yes.
Michigan may be behind them. But I think eventually you'll see states one by one come on board. We've had interesting conversations with a lot of other states. Dave O'Rourke up in New York is anxious to do fixed odds. I think, if I tried to evaluate this, then I'm not looking to take on another court battle yet, but just intellectually discussing the issue. New York, may feel, or the gaming issue may feel, that they need legislation or they need consent, you know, from their gaming board. But I don't think anyone's really focused on the fact that New York and probably every other jurisdiction in this country already sends their signals over to Europe and Australia to participate in fixed odds wagering. So if they're letting them do that, why can't they send it to New Jersey? So, you know, I don't have the appetite for a declaratory judgment action right now. I'm too busy dealing with other things. But hopefully we can persuade the gaming board that they don't have to make the gigantic leap to have legislation to do this. Or maybe the legislation will go quickly. I know that some of the legislators up there are keen to participate in fixed odds. And from my view, even though I love New Jersey and I love our signal here at Monmouth Park, if you get New York, you make fixed odds for the country.
That's fair. And you know, similarly, on this vein, I don't know if I've asked you this. I'm sure I did at some point years ago. In terms of loving New Jersey, what has to happen to open the marketplace for New Jersey players to have the option to use an ADW of their own choice? The restriction with the New Jersey bets?
I mean, let me put it this way. You know, I sit on that board. I'm the manager for New Jersey bets. There are five seats on the board. Three are designated to the NJSEA, one of which I sit in. Freehold has two seats. So according to the Attorney General's opinion, which is new and different than at the past advice, that in March, when the TVG contract expires with the exclusive, that the operating board has the ability to permit us to open up the market and to provide the ability for other people to offer ADW also in New Jersey. So I can't speak for the board because I'm only one vote.
Right.
But the board, you know, will consider that issue. A lot of it is based on guarantees. So TVG offers us a very good guarantee. They've been a good partner. You know, we like doing business with them. But having said that, TVG also would like to, like, have the FanDuel presence in New Jersey. So you may see that next March we open up the market, but the key to open up the market is the guarantee. So the way it works in my mind, and most people seem okay with this on the ADW side, you offer a guarantee that's a reasonable number as a minimum guarantee. And based on the business that that ADW company has, they pay their share of the guarantee. So if TVG has 50% of the business, they're going to pay 50%. More likely to be FanDuel Racing as opposed to TVG, but I can't speak for them either. But there's a huge appetite, like Naira Betts would like to come in.
Sure.
Some of the casinos would like to come in. You know, I think, you know, the future of New Jersey is most likely to open it up. But, as I said, I can't speak for the others on the board.
But in terms of the timing, we are now within a countdown, a reasonable countdown of March of 23 as the potential landscape change.
Again, I'm hesitant to commit the board when I'm only one person, but my inclination is that we need to decide this by December in order to be up and running. With the
I was going to say, there's got to be some advance negotiating that that takes place.
Right.
All right. I'm glad I asked that because I had forgotten. You know, that contract, Dennis, harkens back to an era that of those guarantees, of those exclusives, because much like many of the decisions that were made by racetrack organizations going all the way back to the 70s and the advent of off-track betting in general, everybody thought, oh, it's found money. This will be great. And then it didn't take long for everybody to realize we painted ourselves into a bit of a corner. And so often I see the Jersey residents not necessarily unhappy with the service per se, although there's been the occasions where there have been service issues, but just that they haven't, that they can't shop their, they can't shop their wagering. I mean, they've got an opportunity in some cases to probably get rebates from other, you know, from other ADW companies, if there were other ADW companies allowed into the market. So I mean, it would be better for the consumer, and it sounds from your side of things that it would be, you know, better for the state probably long term in terms of the revenues that they glean, and everybody else involved, an open marketplace.
That's probably correct, you know, provided that the appropriate guarantee can be secured. Without the guarantee, you know, the racetracks are hurt. You know, Freehold Meadowlands and Monmouth all share in that revenue. The horsemen share in the revenue for purses. It's very important that we preserve that.
Out of curiosity, and not to, I mean, this is, I don't think this is proprietary information per se. Does the ADW revenue currently, is it like in New York where Naira Bet's wagers essentially are equal to, you know, for Naira, equal to what a bet take, what their skim is on track?
Depends where the bet's made. Here on track,
yeah,
you know, with the ADW component, it's considered an on track bet. The splits are the same if it's on track. If it's off track, it works differently.
Okay, because I'm just curious if you know, the house, you know, that the racetracks essentially get, you know, get a little bit more. You know, one of the real issues with ADW in general was, you know, that here were these interlopers that had no bricks and mortar and really had no actual stake in the running of racetracks, and they were, you know, Fred Pope called the upside down, the inverted pyramid, where the financial structure was completely out of whack with the needs of the industry.
Yeah, we have all the costs. We have 1,600 horses on the backside. We have all the expense of operating, and ADW doesn't have that. So it's important that we preserve, you know, what we're currently getting, which I think the industry is willing to do from the conversations I've had so far.
Well, and Dallas is about to join us, I think. But from your standpoint, Dennis, you're healthy. I mean, certainly the purse structure seems very solid, and, you know, for the marketplace, you know, being, you know, kind of squeezed between the Mid-Atlantic and New York, you know, the purses are attractive. It seems like the business is okay.
Yeah, well, it's good. Well, it's good right now. But, you know, come Saturday, it's going to be a little hectic. We'll see how the weather goes. But we survived that last time. We'll survive it this time.
A couple different times.
Right now, it looks to me like the weather is going to cooperate, so we shouldn't have a problem. It'll be hot, but we'll have a good day.
It's summer.
A good race.
It's summer. It's hot. That's what it is. Dallas Baker joining us. And Dallas, Dennis Drazen with us on the other side here. Good morning. And wanted to touch base with you. And Dennis is thrilled with how the fixed odds is going so far. Give us an update. We talked to you about 6 weeks ago.
Hello, Dallas.
Yeah, g'day, Steve. G'day, Dennis. Lovely. Getting exciting, isn't it? 2 days out from our first $1 million race with fixed odds. It's great when you actually get through the planning and it's now into game time. So it's pretty exciting. Yeah, I'm not sure how much Dennis has said, but like as we probably mentioned 6 weeks ago, Steve, this initial part was all about proof of concept, getting it up and rolling, getting it running at Monmouth Park, just betting on Monmouth at Monmouth to get through all the teething problems at the start and, you know, build it up into Hassel Day. And, you know, we're very close to having everything right, very close to having the Monmouth Bets website up and running. And, looking forward to a very exciting weekend of racing, that's for sure.
Dallas, I didn't ask Dennis per se about, you know, the weekend to weekend. We're only, what, 4 weekends in, 5 weekends in. What, how many weekends? Six?
Yeah, but six weekends. Probably week 10 this week, I think. Yeah,
okay,
something like
so
that.
Even more.
Yeah.
how do the trends, you know, how are the trends showing up, and what, you know, what are you seeing in regards to, you know, what looks like continuity?
Yeah, I think the most pleasing thing that I've taken away from it is, and I know we've mentioned it that many times, one of the main reasons and one of the main attractions of fixed odds betting is to prevent that. I backed a horse at 5-1 and then it went off at 5-2 or even money or whatever else, and you're expecting to collect $100 on a ticket and you collect $30, and all of those stories that we, as people who have been in racing, have heard for so many years and so long. Now it's great to hear people, you know, so excited about the fact that they beat the tote. You know, I think 70% of the time or thereabouts, give or take, the fixed odds price has been better than the tote, and naturally, if people are getting more money in their kick, they're normally going to be happy. So to hear those happy, positive stories rather than all the negatives, like one of the greatest things about the racing industry is allowing people to be part of the game and back a winner and feel good about it. But a lot of the time, and especially with the evolution of so much high-grade computer program money, high-volume money, is that a lot of the time people are backing a winner and getting disappointed because they feel like they're getting ripped off or getting less than they thought they were going to. With fixed odds and the general feel with it, and also the people who are engaging in it, younger people, as we've sort of said, that this is our target market, to bring that younger generation back across into racing through something that's a lot easier to understand than tote betting. So seeing that public reaction and getting that feel for it is amazing. And like I jokingly said to one of our colleagues, Kerry, who was on the ground with us a few weeks ago, I've never seen a situation where you sort of evolved into being the face of the book at Monmouth when we're there and doing that day in, day out. The bookmaker is actually somebody who's quite loved on course. Normally they're the enemy and the bad guy, but you know, I feel like I'm some sort of rock star there and feel the love of everybody on course doing it. So I think in itself that's one of the keys of the proof of concept, is the happiness that it's bringing to people and the excitement that it's bringing to people on Monmouth. Obviously, it's only in its infancy, but people, the great thing is people are starting to resonate and understand it and get a feel for it and enjoy the game within the game of getting, of trying to not just find a winner, but getting a winner at a great price as well too. So all of those bits of feedback have been probably the most positive thing out of it.
In terms of a division of responsibility, for you, Dallas, and then Dennis, you know, working in tandem and then also working on certain elements, Dennis, you referred to, you know, the wider expansion and other states, and you know, who's responsible for these next steps, Dallas, from BetMaker's side, and then I'll let Dennis talk about the responsibility for Monmouth and what they can achieve.
Well, I mean, firstly, I think it goes without saying the partnership that BetMakers and Monmouth Park is through Dennis's unbelievable leadership is just a great partnership, and really it should be a blueprint for any other person involved with the track looking around the US of what we can do with what we believe the power of fixed odds is. I mean, you look out, Steve, you see a $2 million big screen, you see a whole new suite of terminals being rolled out, and that's effectively before we even struck a bet in fixed odds and what that partnership can do. Things like that require revenue streams, and we believe, obviously, firmly, that the fixed odds revenue stream is going to be far more serious than $2 million for a big screen and all the other millions that are being spent on new terminals. So I think that's one, using Monmouth Park under the microscope as an example of what can happen to the US racing industry, and can happen to the US racing industry pretty quickly. Naturally, whilst we've been working through New Jersey, we've been working through other states, and we expect the rollout to look pretty similar to what happened with sports betting. The states that are interested in sports betting are pretty much the obvious ones that are looking at adopting the fixed odds betting model on racing. Colorado, we've already got the regulations through, so it's legal to take a bet in Colorado. Just the commercial terms are being worked out for the stakeholders there at the moment. And a lot of the other states are you know, well down the path of looking at whether it's legislation or regulations to get it approved in their specific states. And obviously discussions with horsemen groups and tracks are well down the road. So, I mean, we would like to think in the next 12 to 18 months, you're going to see a lot more states than New Jersey on and up and running. And, you know, that's when this program will really get humming. Give it, you know, a year or two to get up and running on rails, get all the sportsbook makers integrated and betting on it. And that's when you'll really start seeing some impacts. But, you know, we're pretty proud to be in the driver's seat in a lot of those discussions, and really looking forward to what the benefits can be brought to the racing industry. And I think, as I said, as we said, I think case in point, you've only got to look around Monmouth and have a look at what we've been able to do with our great partnership with Dennis, brought to us by Bill Pascrell III. It's a few years ago, actually. It's actually our anniversary of meeting Bill today, actually. So it's been a very fruitful relationship, and I think, as I said, it's a good blueprint for other tracks to look at.
And Dennis, on your end and on Monmouth's end, I mean, in terms of traffic and obviously luring people, you know, to the racetrack, the sports book was a big part of that, and now even the expansion of the sports book, are you getting the traffic necessary from a critical mass standpoint?
We are. I think, you know, the past several years, because this BetMakers relationship started before COVID, and in terms of the team effort, you know, we had a conference call once a week, you know, where we discussed all these issues and collaborated on the effort. And those calls, you know, have gone on for years now. I think right now we're doing every other week, but it always seems like we have calls midweek because things come up. So this is a continued partnership where we're not only focused on New Jersey, but I continue to consult with BetMakers on their rollout throughout the rest of the country and, you know, use a lot of relationships that we currently have, you know, in order to try and educate people and explain to them about fixed odds. People aren't quite sure yet. You know, everybody wants to do fixed odds, I think, but they're not sure of the proper rollout, so it's important for the BetMakers team and Monmouth to work together to try and, like, set the stage here and then copy the blueprint throughout the country. Dallas has, you know, become a rock star here, maybe because he was giving out those $5 free bets for a couple of weeks. So I saw everyone flock into Dallas, and I'm not allowed to take that stuff, but,
you know,
but Dallas is quite popular.
It's taken me 46 years, but I've realized that for me to get spins, I've got to buy them.
But the other thing that's important is BetMakers is dedicated to racing. So, you know, you have a company that comes in, they buy us a $2 million video board. That's massive. So all of the consumers here, the fans, love the board. BetMakers establishes BetMakers Bonanza, where if you win the Haskell, the Travers, and
that's
the Breeders'
right.
Cup Classic.
Right.
You know, you get an extra $1 million. Authentic won it,
yep,
you know, a couple of years ago. So, you know, maybe one of our contestants will be successful this year. We have a good race with some really top horses here. I'm impressed by the race we put together. Not a gigantic field, but real quality.
We've got four Grade One winners. We talked about that earlier this morning with Tom Lucci, and you've got the whole card, actually. The other five stakes. The terrific Haskell Day on tap. We'll do more with Dallas. Dallas, we'll see you tomorrow or Saturday.
Yep.
And Dennis, to close out, we got about 45 seconds. Some final thoughts, Haskell.
Yeah,
22.
I think it's important because a lot of the talk around the country from horsemen and from racetracks is relative to the cannibalization issue. And we don't see the cannibalization at this point. And what's important for me, BetMakers went out and spent $50 million to buy Sportech. So why are they going to do that if they think there's going to be cannibalization of the tote system?
Yep.
I think they're going to help each other and grow the product here in the United States and grow the handle and 5 years from now, we'll all be looking back and saying, gee, we're happy we did this.
There's no doubt. There was nothing but the proverbial right reasons to do this and to break the ice. There's growing pains like there is with anything, but certainly worth the effort. Dallas, I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. And Dennis, best of luck on Saturday. Always a delight to come down here.
My pleasure seeing you again.
Dennis Drazen, Monmouth Park, Dallas Baker from BetMakers. Earlier, DRF Steve Anderson, Chuck Spina with just a delightful time with Frank Miramati as well, and Ron Flatter and Tom Liucci to get us going this morning. Back tomorrow right here at Monmouth Park, and the weekend preview, because of course between Saratoga, Monmouth, and Del Mar and everything else going on, it's going to be a terrific weekend. Look forward to it. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Gold on the apple.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.